This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. Welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Saints, Souls and Samhain, the Celtic Day of the Dead.
So, even though by the time you guys will be listening to this, the holiday will have passed, Jules and I are actually recording this on the 31st. And just to get even more in the season, as we're recording this, I am actually carving a pumpkin. So if you hear carving sounds, it's perfectly innocent, I assure you. As are the screams.
What exactly do carving sounds
sound like? Oh, you know, stop, please stop, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, because pumpkins are well known for making that sort of noise.
I seem to be making some sort of mistake here, Jules. Anyway.
That's not pumpkin, is it? Moving on. Most of us know of it as Halloween. In fact, Halloween comes from two things which are mixed together, which aren't even the original Samhain, but All Souls Day and All Saints Day. Now, pre the Norman conquest over here in Britain, it was known as All Souls Day, and it was a day where I think basically the Christian church, which was a lot more liberal over in Britain at that time, because we were under mainly the Celtic Rite at the time. We weren't under the Latin Church as much. But basically, they still felt a little bit sort of squeamish about the idea of fairies and spirits coming back. So they had to put a Christian holiday over the top of it, really, to give people an alternative. Now, ultimately, they came up with All Souls Day, where we celebrate the fact that literally all the souls going to heaven are being reclaimed, if you like. It's not quite the Day of Judgment, but, you know, we celebrate that all the souls are there. They're closer to us. We can still speak to the dead, as it were. And then post the Norman conquest, they changed it to All Saints Day because they didn't like the idea of, you know, the All Souls sounded a little bit too Halloween-y for Halloween for them. And they actually celebrated for a little while. They had All Souls Day on the 1st of November and All Saints Day on the 2nd of November. And All Saints Day was much more rigid under the Latin Church, which later became the Catholic Roman Church.
Yeah.
And ultimately, those two holidays merged together and became known as All Hallows Eve, which we then slurred into Halloween.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from. That's the Christian side of it. Underneath all that, you have the old Irish Gaelic word Samhain, which literally means summer's end. And it's one of the four great pagan fire festivals, or the four great quarter days. The other three would be Beltane, Lunasav, and Imolc.
Yeah.
They basically make up the four big quarters of the year. And they're called the fire festivals because they would have been big bonfires. You'll notice we tend to have bonfire night over here in the UK on the 5th of November. That really is part of the whole Halloween thing.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that actually in a second. Particularly, yeah, the bonfire night and how it's celebrated in different parts of the UK. But yes, Halloween has a very long sort of history of a number of different holidays which are all merged together, but it all begins with Samhain, which is pronounced in a number of different ways. You know, you can, some people call it Samhain.
That's the only way I've heard it pronounced, which is actually incorrect.
Really?
Yeah, well, it comes from the Gaelic. I mean, in Wales it's pronounced Samhain. In Ireland, it's pronounced Samhain, and in Scotland, it's sort of half swallowed, Samhain. And then it's different in the Isle of Man and various other places, but they're all noticeably quite Celtic communities.
Yeah, I do pronounce it Samhain, so there you go. I was in the right, but anyway, but it's a very, very old holiday. As with most pagan holidays, actually, we have a number of pagan holidays which have been sort of stolen by the we're going to call it the Catholic Church, for lack of a better word, which were not stolen, but repurposed by the church. When they wanted to, they realised that just doing a hostile takeover when it came to religion wasn't always the best thing, and that you had to give people an alternative. Now, in the UK, we didn't actually really celebrate Halloween to the degree that they do in other parts of the world until quite recently.
No.
Have you found that?
Yeah, no, that certainly when I was growing up, trick-or-treating, getting dressed up and things, that was quite unusual.
Yeah.
It was starting to become slightly more of a thing, but it was still very unusual, really.
Yeah.
It was a sort of people threw Halloween parties. It was a gimmicky thing. It was an excuse to have a party, not a big holiday. And now it's become quite a big thing over here.
Though obviously still not quite as big as it is in the US. And a lot of people actually think that the holiday sort of really originates in the US, and that's not actually correct. And now we're going to go on to Bonfire Night. For those who obviously haven't realised yet, of our listeners, I am dating an Irish man. That sounds very odd. My partner is from Northern Ireland, and he really, really enjoys Halloween. Now, I've never really got to celebrate it when I was growing up for a number of different reasons. But they, in Ireland, they don't, for very obvious reasons, don't really celebrate the 5th of November. They don't really have Bonfire Night. And the bonfires, the night they do have bonfires, is obviously Halloween. So the big tradition in America for Halloween comes from Ireland, and the Irish immigrants who went out to America and basically brought the holiday with them and brought a lot of their beliefs with them. So it is a very Celtic holiday, which in a bizarre turn of events, they celebrate more in the US than they do in Britain until recently. And our influence of it has definitely come from the US, not from Ireland, I feel.
Although it's quite interesting that all the things that we now associate with Halloween, like carving root vegetables and getting dressed up in costumes and things like that, all those were traditions that originated in the Celtic holiday.
Yeah.
So, you know, we didn't practice them for hundreds of years over here. And then they sort of came back from the US.
Yeah, they did. And now here's a question. What do you know what sort of things people did to celebrate All Saints Day and All Souls Day?
There was a lot of mass.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Generally, there would have been mass feasting, and it would have been like I think there was also a public holiday as well, which were quite rare if you think about it. That you would have had Sunday off, but you wouldn't have had a weekend as such in those days. You'd have worked every other day, and most of it would have been hard work, farming or whatever.
So yeah,
having an actual day which is like, well, this is designated holiday. It's the same with May Day, which, you know,
it's designated holiday, but you do have to go to mass. Is it worth it?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing was, at the time, certainly under Celtic rite, and then slightly less, but still to a certain extent under the Norman rule, it was a day when you cut loose a bit and you didn't stick to the rules quite as much. So, I mean, that's why you had merry begots, which were children who were conceived out of wedlock during one of the old fire festivals, which were now sort of Christian holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Those children were considered lucky. I wonder how lucky they are, you know, being born out of wedlock to someone who then probably wasn't able to get married.
Yeah.
But they were favourites in their communities, and generally they were provided for, unless something went wrong and there was a drought or a famine or a plague of some kind. And then generally they were blamed as children of the fair folk.
Of course.
Because, which is, you know, that's just how it works.
Yeah. you almost said the F word there.
I did. I don't think I can get through the entire episode without saying it, to be honest.
Let's see who says it first.
Generally, though, the Feast of All Souls and the Feast of All Saints, not to be confused with each other, were basically celebrated with a, you know, with a mass, with feasting. It would have been like a really nice Sunday.
Yeah, good Sunday. And we would there would have also been other traditions, and it would have been a fire festival, as you say. Now, fire is an incredibly important aspect, especially of this season, where if you think of each season having a different element, the coming into winter and sort of into autumn, it's definitely the fire season.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit more about that? I leave it to Jules because she knows about these things.
I suppose if we're going back into the proper Celtic tradition that would have predated what the Irish then came to know as Samhain, to be fair, the Irish festival dates from sunset on the 31st right up until sunrise on the 2nd of November.
Oh, great.
And then the month in Irish actually shares the same name, or Savna.
Oh.
So really what its literal translation is, as I said, summer's end. So it was sort of a combination fire festival and a day to honour your ancestors and the dead who've gone before. It was in Celtic mythology, it was known as the time when Well, with all the fire festivals, but particularly with regards to, you know, your dead loved ones, or your dead not so loved ones, in fact, was the time when the veil between worlds was supposed to be thinnest, so you could commune with the dead, or they would come back and visit you. That was a popular belief. The old, I mean, this might not be something that our folks in the US have actually really heard a lot of, but the tradition of leaving out bread and milk on a doorstep in order to appease
Go on, say
the Aoshi. Ha ha ha! The
And for those who don't know what those are.
Aoshi. Weirdly enough, you can translate Aoshi as either the F word or a spirit. They were ghosts and fairies. There, I've said it.
Yeah.
Ghosts and fairies were interchangeable at that point. So yeah, that was. But basically, that was a fine offering to make sure that you were given good luck in the year ahead, and nothing really impeded you or got in the way. It's the same with sort of mumming and guising, which is what we now do with dressing up in Halloween costumes. Mumming and guising was supposed to confuse the Aoshi so that they wouldn't abduct you as you went from house to house begging for food, because it was one of the times of year where you could ask anyone for food and they couldn't actually turn you down. Proper Celtic tradition.
But there was also another aspect of the Celtic tradition, which was that on Halloween, past a certain time of night, you couldn't go down certain routes, because it was believed that Halloween was the night also that the fairies would be moving from one dun to another. So again, it was you'd wear these costumes, and again, so that if you did come across anything, it would just assume you were another one of them. And the idea was that you did not want to, because fairies don't like to be seen. If you did see one, you kept your mouth shut about it. If everyone was dressed up like that, no one was really looking, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Also, with the fairies, the Halloween was the night, or Samhain was the night of the tithe, every 7 years, which would be the night where the fairies, you know, if they happened to have any mortals that had wandered into any of their burrows or their toadstool rings, they might offer them up in order to get favours back from the gods. I think you can quite clearly see that that's a legend that sort of has its roots firmly in Celtic tradition. So if you've read any Irish or Scottish mythology, you'll find something like that in there. Obviously, with the Celtic tradition, it's part of the Wheel of the Year. So we are up until sort of Mabon, Mabon is what we would call Harvest Festival now. It's the autumn equinox. We're under the rule of the oak, and then as we hit Samhain, that is when the oak dies and the holly takes over. So you've got the two kings in Celtic tradition, the Holly King and the Oak King. And then the holly rules right up until roughly Imolc. But, you know, depending, it this is where it depends on what sort of weather you get over here in the UK during the year, because some years you can have. Certainly here in Gloucestershire, we've had snow from November to February before, and fairly recently, which would be a very hard winter for us. I mean, it's nothing. If anyone from Norway is listening to this, they are laughing their socks off right now, because
It's all of our Norwegian
it's
listeners.
like, what that 3 inches of snow? That's nothing. The UK grinds to a halt when it gets snow, but it's true. We don't get an awful lot of snow.
Yeah, we really don't know how to deal with it. We don't know how to deal with any kinds of weathers.
So getting that sort of weather. And it would have been a lot harder before. We've had a few mini ice ages since the whole tradition was set up. Would have actually been considered a year when the Holly King was more supreme than the Oak King. That was how they reasoned it out to themselves, or certainly how the common folk reasoned it out. So yes, part of why Samhain was so important was it was partly giving thanks for the summer, which hopefully had been good and provided lots of food, which would see them through the winter, and partly you were hailing the fall of one king and the rise of another.
The other thing is that winter, and the coming of winter, people assume that it is all about death, and the tradition of ghost stories is something that we also see that comes a lot in Christmas, and that's a real tradition, at the very least I know in England, where you tell ghost stories at Christmas, and so this idea that actually Halloween is the or Samhain is hailing the start of the season almost of the dead, and winter is the time when we become closer, I think, to this other realm in many senses.
Yeah, and part of it obviously was the respecting of the fact that the midwinter harvest was people who weren't physically well enough, the old, the very young, people who happened to come down with a really nasty strain of some ague or whatever, would generally die during the winter, and you know, you had to be a bit philosophical about it.
So yes. It's an exciting time for us, especially for us us writers actually as well.
Yes.
It's a time of mystery, and it is a time of creativity and fire. Let's talk about fire a little bit.
Well, after the carving.
Yes, I'm all about that carving and that fire. There's a theme coming along here, Jules. Now, fire. I'm reading a book at the moment, which was bought for me very nicely, which is called The Shanahi. The Shanahi. And Shanahi is the Irish word for storyteller. They were storytellers. And it's this guy who goes around different parts of Ireland and he picks up stories from local areas of fairy stories and ghost stories. Now, again, we have to express that fairies, especially in the Celtic tradition, are very deeply connected with the dead. One could say that they are one of the same. So, when we talk about fairies in this case, we are also talking about spirits and ghosts and demons and all of that, all of the Halloween kind of horde. And so he goes around and he picks up these stories. And one thing he said is that he loves going to the local pub. For many reasons, I'm sure. But he loves going there. And he says, whilst the sun is up, you know, everyone sort of laughs at him and laughs at the sort of the stories. And then the sun goes down and people have a few more drinks. And it's at that point, as the darkness hits, the stories can't start coming out. And says, no, but really, we don't go down this place or we don't go down this area. And he was talking about the fact that there were certain parts and certain areas where people just didn't go. Past a certain time of night because it was just so dark. And actually, that kind of fear lived on for generations and generations with, you know, living on an incredibly sensible people who, in the light of day, honestly didn't believe. Past a certain time of night, when inhibitions had been sort of exhausted a little bit, the belief came back. And actually, the thing that really stopped and ended the belief was the creation of electric lighting, which changed everything. And suddenly, having lights on cars meant that you could go to different places and go down these routes, and people were not afraid to travel at night anymore. And something about the electric light banished the darkness. But oddly enough, it wasn't just the absence of light, because they, you know, nothing stopped them taking torches. Nothing, and when I say torches, I mean fire. Nothing stopped them taking fire, but electric light banishes the supernatural in a way that fire does not. And I believe that fire, especially within the Celtic tradition, is very closely linked with the supernatural.
Fire, obviously, transformer, if you like, it transitions something from one state to another. Mm-hmm. And far more obviously than, say, the other three elements do.
Yeah.
Fire was also considered a cleansing force, a very dangerous force, and a creative force. And that would have been looking at things like clearing the fields after the harvest, where they would have burnt off the stubble. That actually helped renew the soil for when they wanted to plant it the next year. And the same with forest fires and things. Obviously, if you're somewhere like Canada or Australia, where you have most awful forest fires, far, far worse than anything we get over here, then that probably doesn't seem like a great renewal to you. But it does. It burns off the mast and the young saplings and things that aren't actually going to make it. And the older trees have got big enough to withstand a certain amount of fire. So it was something to be respected, but it was also at the same time a symbol of life and creativity. Hence people leaping over bonfires together.
Yes. Now, we do have Bonfire Night again in the UK, and Bonfire Night here is to celebrate the 5th of November, Guy Fawkes, the foiling of the Guy Fawkes plot. Now, once again, I think it's very safe to say that this is a holiday which just took over another much more ancient holiday.
Yeah, it was all part of the same tradition. The bonfire originally comes from, it basically comes from bone fire. Samhain was the time of year when you would have started to do your culling, so you would have got rid of the stock that weren't going to live through the winter.
Yeah, we do when we say culling, we do mean of the, you know, the animal kind, not just the, right, well, it's the murder time of the year again.
But oddly, that was part of it in some communities. If they really thought somebody wasn't going to make it through the winter, there is evidence that they did actually get rid of them, or that there was a ritual way whereby people said, well, no, this is where I'm going to get off, as it were.
Yeah.
This is my stop.
The old euthanasia.
Yeah.
One hopes it was consensual.
Probably best we don't look too hard at that.
Yeah. Let's
and it,
not look too
and it would have been years when things were particularly bad. And obviously there's the tradition of the Year King, which was enacted in in play or actually every 7 years.
Now you say obviously, but please go through that for me, please.
Okay, the tradition of the Year King is extremely old. Basically, the Celts didn't actually, I say Celts, there's obviously lots and lots of Celtic tribes, but we'll
Yeah.
call them the Celts for the sake of argument, didn't actually have a king as such, and each community had their own, if you like, tribal leader.
Yeah.
But every year they would elect somebody to be king, to be the Year King, and that person, that man, would be denied nothing. All the women would consider it an honor to sort of sleep with him. He'd be given the choicest food. The only like downside to this rather nice lifestyle was the fact that if it was a particularly bad year, if it's the harvest started to look a bit spotty, then they tended to kill the Year King at the end of that year and sow the fields with his blood.
Okay.
This didn't happen every year, but it obviously happened enough for it to make the legend into or the tradition into folk tales, and it echoes to this day. And that's sort of where you get a similar echo in the Samhain Eochu stories about the fair folk having a tithe every 7 years. I think it was 7 years was considered a good time to sort of sow the fields with blood, and it was always the stronger. I mean, this is partly where all the traditions are tied together, but you go back to May Day or Beltane. And the maypole, which we now dance around, believe it or not, that does still happen.
I think I've even danced around it.
Pre that, and obviously the Morris dancing and things like that,
Morris dances.
that used to be actual fighting between men. And the strongest, the one who proved that he was effectively what would have been not quite a war leader, but equivalent to that. Good stock, good breeding stock is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
Was crowned Year King, which seems like a good deal until you get to the small print in September, which says, you know what, the harvest wasn't so great.
So I guess murder time. It's all about murder with the Celts, wasn't it?
It's all about your blood renewing everything, blood and fire. So there you go. We're lovely
All about that
people.
blood and fire.
We're lovely people, really.
So, Halloween. Is the time of stories, and the stories that we get at Halloween are those of ghosts and witches, and murderers very often. And actually, that seems to be quite fitting. It's all about ghosts, witches, and murdering people, so.
It was also about we've had a good harvest and honouring your family, which I think kind of gets shoved to the side a little bit, doesn't it? Because it's not as exciting.
Yeah. So let's talk about the nice aspect of it, which was the honouring of family, and those who have passed, and how those traditions continue to live on.
Well, originally, part of the tradition would have been divination. This is quite often practiced with apples and nuts, hazelnuts particularly. And this is something that's sort of lived on in a game form. I don't know if you've ever tried apple bobbing.
Apple bobbing, yeah.
Absolutely impossible.
Speak for yourself.
I just can't get my jaw to unhinge that much. I'm not a snake. I cannot get my.
Well, la-di-da.
I either need smaller apples or I need a bigger mouth. I don't know. I'm not very good at apple bobbing.
I have an exceptionally large mouth, so I'm rather good at it.
So those were simple forms of divination. There were various other things as well. Scrying with water or oil or melted silver.
Melted silver.
Yeah, it was a tradition. You have a bowl of water, and the questioner would ask a question, and the diviner would pour melted silver into the water and read, rather like an oracle from the shapes of the silver made in the water. And then later it became melted lead, because I'm guessing they ran out of silver. And then it sort of progressed into wax. You can actually use wax apparently instead of a melted candle or whatever. So that's another the straight up scrying where you just look into a bowl of water.
And get
I don't need
thirsty.
to go into any more detail about
Steadily
that.
more thirsty as
And
you
this
look.
is all part of the whole that originated in the desire to honour and commune with members of your family who'd already moved on, and the idea that the veil was thinnest so you could contact them or they'd come home. And this is partly where there's a little bit of discrepancy about having a carved turnip in the window.
Yes.
Because the faces were supposed, it would have been a turnip over here in the UK. We just didn't grow pumpkins until very recently.
Yeah.
So a turnip or a swede, which were hardy enough winter vegetables to actually carve. And the faces that get carved into pumpkins now and were carved into that swedes and turnips, and probably mangel wurzels as well, thinking about it. What you'd call rutabagas if you're in the US were designed to scare off the Aoshi, or say the house is protected. But putting a light in the window is supposed to guide your loved ones home if they were visiting. So there's an interesting dichotomy there. It's like, yes, we do want to be visited by the spirits, just not any spirits.
The door's open, but not for you.
I think it is interesting that apples and things are all tied up with it as well, because there is the tradition of apple wassailing.
Now go through that one.
This happens sometimes during Twelfth Night as well. Mm-hmm. And it usually happens in the areas of the UK where you had, or have still, the big apple orchards. And it used to be that people would fire arrows into the trees, and now they discharge 12-bore shotguns. They pour a libation of cider on the apple tree roots and then fire, you know, just up into the branches of the tree. And it's supposed to traditionally promote a good apple harvest the following year.
Instead, so, it just upsets the local wildlife.
Yes. I mean, I don't know. I think anyone has ever done a study on, you know, number of firearms discharged compared to bushels per apple. Again, it's just another illustration of how inextricably life and death were tied up at Samhain.
There you go. Were you guys thinking of any of that whilst you were preparing for your Halloween traditions, is the question?
No, it's probably I want to be a slutty pumpkin.
Or Harley Quinn, in this case. Harley Quinn and Elsa were the two main costumes that you see around. Not that I have a problem with that. Let's talk about witches.
Okay.
We see a lot of witches around Halloween, and that's not just costume-wise. We see a lot of witches in movies. A lot of Halloween movies are about witches. So, and again, I think that this is actually more of an American tradition than anything else.
I think that goes back to Salem.
Yeah. So, in the spirit of Halloween, let's talk about Salem.
Okay. No pressure.
I did not actually tell Jules that we were going to talk about Salem, so we haven't prepared anything. Let's talk about Salem, Jules.
The Salem witch trials are extremely famous because they were well documented, and partly because the number of people who were hanged or accused or imprisoned and died of horrible conditions in such a short space of time made people re-examine the whole accusation of witches process. Yeah. Not before, like, lots of people were hanged or, you know, pressed to death under boards and tortured.
What year did it happen?
I want to say 1629. I'm going to have to look that up. Just give me a moment. Oh, no, I'm out by quite a bit. Between February and May, February 1692 and May 1693.
Goodness me.
So right century, but completely wrong year. Don't let me write your history for you.
It was the right century, though.
And it resulted in the executions of 14 women and 6 men, and any number of people who died in the filthy and horrendous conditions of the prisons. Yeah, basically, that was... No one's 100% sure what really started the Salem witch trials. Partly, I think it was the claustrophobic Puritan lifestyle.
I wonder if it isn't also a setback, which is that we need a thing to blame. When things go wrong, we need a thing to blame. And so look at the Celtic tradition, we say, right, we've had a bad harvest, we're going to blame the king, the yearly king. And you take his blood and you feel appeased in that way. And the loss of that tradition meant that they kind of, when bad things happen, they had to blame it on again, blood needed to be taken in some way.
Yeah,
it seems to be an ancient human right.
I have to say, I'm a little bit more sceptical about that because the Puritans, whatever else they were bureaucrats, and they were extremely good at adding and subtracting, and it is very noticeable that the vast majority of people who were executed or who even were accused were quite wealthy. And once you're accused of witchcraft, you forfeited all your worldly goods and it went to the courts.
Yeah, of course.
With a small portion paid to the person who accused you initially.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. I also feel that there was a large element of corruption which came into it as well. But I think that when it comes to the crowd mentality and you know, witch hunts, that's a genuine... When we talk about witch hunts, we know what that means. This kind of people getting into this huge frenzy of blaming somebody and that. And it literally is that frenzy is called a witch hunt.
Yeah, I think the other aspect to it was you have that really claustrophobic, quite restricted lifestyle,
Mm-hmm.
very restricted, particularly for women, especially young girls who haven't left home, and suddenly one of them discovers how you can have a bit of power over somebody else.
Yeah.
So there's that aspect to it too. I mean, if you want to compare it to other witch hunts, if you want to compare it to something horrible like the Spanish Inquisition,
Yeah.
which, technically wasn't really about witches, but was about hunting down Jews
Yeah.
and anybody who just didn't practice the very rigid Roman Catholicism that they were propounding.
Yeah.
And then there were horrific witch trials over here. Obviously, when James was on the show, he was talking about it, but we had horrible ones down in Dorset and Devon and Cornwall.
And we
And
had some, I think some of the worst ones happened in Scotland.
Scotland, being Scotland, were quite happy to burn their witches all the way up to the 1700s. We stopped burning witches in the 1400s in England.
Good on us.
Although, it's not even necessarily that. I mean, we still burned heretics, so really it was splitting hairs. But what they would do to witches or people accused of witchcraft to make them confess is so much more horrific than what they actually did to them at the Salem witch trials. So much so that I actually hesitate to go into detail here.
Yeah, but we'll talk about witches another go into more detail about that at another time. But witches are a huge part of the Halloween tradition, and I honestly do think that that element has come from our American friends.
Yeah, very much so. And it would have been the fact that this fear was produced of women suddenly having power and treating with demons, etc. And perhaps even it was based in this very real fear of, oh my God, if she points at me and accuses me of being a witch, she's kind of got the mic right now. Everyone's listening to her. So perhaps that's partly what's pushed witches into the whole Halloween tradition, because they weren't really part of the original cast with the Ausheen, the spirits, the fairies, and
No, in fact, it was the total opposite in some ways, because of course it was all about you scrying and using stuff which would be termed witchcraft now, was part of everyday life.
interesting point, really. Okay, we haven't really talked about any sort of speculative fiction with this.
We haven't. Let's talk about some of our favourite Halloween films.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not the best person to talk about scary films with, because generally I don't find them scary, but there are films that I like.
All right. What of Halloween films have you watched?
The thing is, I don't know if I really think of them as Halloween films.
Go
I really like Hocus Pocus at Halloween, because it's just
on.
hilarious. And there is a nice macabre, quite sort of chilling element to it. Obviously not a very flattering portrayal for witches, but it is a really good film. What else?
I don't know,
Oh,
Jules. What
I'm
else?
oh right. What do you watch then?
Well, actually, if I'm honest, I don't tend to watch scary stuff because I'm a real coward. So I get scared very
That doesn't help.
easily. So I don't actually watch a lot of scary things. I think one of the big Halloween films that I know a lot of people watch is the I think it's Tim Burton. Well, yeah, pretty much anything by Tim Burton. The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, see, in my opinion, that's a Christmas film.
But see, there we go again. It's this actually this relationship where often, very often, we get scary films which seem to be, we're not sure whether they're actually Christmas films or they're Halloween. And we get these a lot of stuff which is actually scary stories and stuff which are actually based around Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, it was traditional to tell ghost stories at Yuletide, so.
Yes.
And again, that comes from, well, it's winter, it's really cold, we can't go outside, and we can't do any farming or anything,
Well,
so
let's
we have
scare
to stay
ourselves
inside.
silly.
So that's why you quite often you might have had travelling storytellers and jongleurs and bards, etc., throughout the centuries, who would stay over the winter. And if they were skilled, then they would be quite welcome, because they kept everyone entertained when they had to stay indoors. And happy stories probably didn't keep people interested for very long.
Yeah, no, they liked the scary ones. And I think there was also, again, the moment you had the fire, hearing a story by the fireside, you're much more likely to believe a ghost story if you're sat by a fire than you are if you're sat with all the lights on in a room. This is just a fact. It's something about the flickering quality of light, and darkness. Which we lose. We lose that sense of imagination, I think, with electrical lighting a
Yeah,
little bit.
well, it's the thing with electrical light is you turn it on, you turn it off.
Yeah, it's constant. You are in
Whereas,
control of it. With a fire, it can just.
yeah, and that that hits on a very primitive level, because if the fire went out at one point, that meant that the predators would come out, and there was a good, I don't mean like predator from the sci-fi film. Yeah, we had fire. Cro-Magnon man and woman used to use fire to ward off the predator.
We have a very long history with predator in the UK.
No, obviously predators, wolves, for example, which might actually be driven through hunger to attack in winter, because deer are actually quite fast and humans aren't. So
no.
If they were really desperate, or you had an injured wolf and it couldn't run very fast anymore. And I imagine it's the same with a lot of other predators. We forget that, obviously, wolves are extinct in Britain now, apart from the small colony that was reintroduced in Scotland. Lynxes also died out around about the same time. Bears went sort of 100 years after the wolf. These were all animals that were indigenous to Britain. It's just that we sort of hunted them to extinction. But these were all things that were, I mean, not bears so much, because one would hope they'd be sleeping during the winter.
One would hope.
You know, when a bear's hungry, it eats.
Again, sorry, it's just your wolf comment reminds me of that Marvel thing where the Hulk just goes crazy and he's in Ireland and he just goes rampaging and sort of, I think, kills a few sheep. And Nick Fury's there like, yeah, the local residents are blaming it on wolves. And I always go, yeah, because we have so many wolves still in Ireland. What century do you guys in America think that we live in?
Yeah, I have to say the European wolf is all but extinct. You've got small pockets in places like Spain and I think maybe Germany, but I think they were reintroduced, the Schwarzwälder.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, Norway, places like that where it is really cold and mountainous. But generally, no, they're extinct.
We don't have a lot of them about.
We don't have a lot of them. There, as I said, there is a colony of wolves up in Scotland. So they were reintroduced.
They're not natural wolves.
Well,
you know what I mean. They were introduced. It was part of a program.
Anyway, that's a little bit off piece. But basically, if fire is unpredictable as well. So when fire went out, then there was a good chance you were going to be hunted and you might not make it till the morning. Or you might die of cold.
Yep.
Or obviously when a fire is unpredictable in the other way, if it caught on to something else, you could end up burning your entire lodge down.
Which is also a concern.
Which is bad. So, yeah, as you say, the ghost stories and the willingness to suspend disbelief in that way is all connected with, exactly how much agency and how unpredictable the source of light was.
Yeah.
It's extremely unpredictable, as opposed to an electric light.
Unless, of course, you live in the Middle East, in which case power cuts. Mean that.
Does that bring the wolves in?
It brings something in. I remember we winter. There were times when we were in the Middle East where the lights would go out past a certain time, and it was actually very frightening. People underestimate how frightening the dark really is, and especially in the UK where it gets dark very, very quickly. And if you're in a rural part of the UK and it gets dark, we don't necessarily get a lot of moonlight in some places, if it's very, very cloudy. And so without the light pollution, when it's dark, it's very, very dark.
Yeah. And, we're 4:30 in the afternoon. It's starting to get dark now.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're at that edge of the year. We are well in the Northern Hemisphere here. It's not, as I said, like some of the other Denmark or Norway, where it would be probably dark by now. But,
yep.
You know, in another week's time, it probably will be dark at 4:00. That's usual for the UK.
Yeah.
And it's just, you're right about the unremitting, unleavened darkness. And unless you have gone and lived way out in the sticks, way out in the countryside, and where they don't have streetlights or any kind for miles, then you won't appreciate it in the same way. If you go and stay, I'm not suggesting everyone goes and stays at my parents' house, by the way. I were you to go and stay at my parents' house, when it gets dark there, it's properly dark. There's nothing for miles.
Hey, Jules.
You can
guess
check
we're
going
in a few weeks.
Yeah. It will be house sitting for my parents. I'm telling you where. Madeline's going to join me.
Rural Dorset.
So she can then report back on the dark. Yes. Dark Dorset for you.
We'll make an entire episode all about the darkness. And actually, we're going to talk about some of the ghost stories around Dorset, so I'm actually looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Because it is the season, guys. It is the season of the ghost.
Yes, it is. You know what? We should actually talk about trick-or-treating.
Let's talk about trick-or-treating.
Which I think, again, is an extension of the mumming and guising. And obviously, the Aoshi were known for playing tricks on humans. And I think that was something that continued, obviously, putting out milk or honey and bread were supposed to propitiate them. And that in the same way that people used to go around dressed up in order to disguise the Aoshi and ask for food, you couldn't turn them away just in case they were one of the Aoshi.
Yeah.
Or you got nasty tricks played on you and you didn't want that sort of bad luck. And I think trick-or-treating sort of come from that.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a lot of ideas about what trick-or-treating is. Some people believe that people dressed up in order to scare the monsters and stuff like that. But yeah, there's a lot of ideas about where it came from. Obviously, we're not entirely sure. It might be a combination of different things. But the tradition of actually going door to door in order to get something and the tradition of giving sweets and treats definitely seems to have a basis and origin in the old Celtic tradition of going door to door and begging for food on the one night where you didn't want to turn anyone away in case they were something, not least because it could gain you favour if you treated a she nicely, but also you did not want to treat a she badly. This is where we talk about Beauty and the Beast, obviously.
Yeah.
Where the idea is that he turned a woman away and she turned him into a beast. So if any strangers come to your doors, Halloween night, if any trick-or-treaters come to your doors, don't treat them badly because you don't know who they are.
I think it's also worth noting that has deep roots in both Celtic and Nordic tradition.
Yeah.
With the old hospitality laws. And the old hospitality laws were understood as that if somebody came asking you for refuge for a night, food and refuge for a night, then they were bound not to do anything that would harm you, but you were bound to give them room and board, food for the night and somewhere to stay, even if it was a shed.
Yeah.
And you weren't in their purest form, those hospitality laws dictated that you weren't necessarily allowed to ask them for their true name. So you might be housing someone who was actually an enemy.
Yeah.
But the old courtesy laws, the old hospitality laws stated that you could not, that you would give them somewhere to stay anyway, and that they would do nothing to harm you while they stayed there. So it was a bit of respect on either side. How much that was applied, I don't know, but that's where a lot of the giving of soul cakes, for example.
Yeah.
And going door to door asking for food came from.
It's very interesting. It is a holiday which is about community in many, many ways, and it is about community and it's about family, and it's a lot about remembrance as well. You know, we talk about stories, and there is another element to the storytelling, which is that it wasn't just telling ghost stories in order to scare people. It was the sharing of old stories and old traditions which were passed down so that they would not be forgotten.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just stories about ghosts and stuff like that. It was stories about your family, and it was stories about your ancestors, basically, and your and who you were. What are you doing for Halloween, Jules?
I'm not doing very much. I tend to celebrate it quite quietly. I did go trick-or-treating once, though, when I was 14 or 15.
Colour me very envious. I look forward to the day I have children and I can go trick-or-treating with them.
Well, we went, living right out in the sticks in the middle of nowhere, and it was really, really dark. And we went as a group of us. And we did go door to door. I say door to door. We walked a mile, went to a door. We walked 2 miles, went to another door, which is pretty much what it was like. We got a lot of walking done that night. We walked off the candy before we got it.
Yikes.
But, we were in a group and we had fun. And I do remember, as one of the older children in the group, children, teenagers, whatever, both me and one of the lads who I was with, we said at the beginning, right, we're not knocking on the doors of anyone we know to be sort of elderly or, vulnerable in any way, because we didn't want to frighten them. So perhaps we missed the whole trick-or-treat thing. But it was very much done as something in fun, as in we all got dressed up as vampires and witches and what have you. There was probably a skeleton and a mummy in there somewhere.
Probably, yeah. Very typical. See, that's the thing. It stopped actually being in many ways a tradition where people are dressing up as scary things, and now they're just using it as an excuse to dress up.
Yes, but then before that, with the whole with the mumming and guising, it wasn't necessarily you dress as something scary. One traditional thing that you would take around with you is a horse skull on a pole with wrapped in a white sheet. She was supposed to
Ah,
carry death
yeah.
with you.
That's nice, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's a strangely macabre and cheerful item, but
You and I really need to talk about your definition of cheerful.
I don't see that being resolved somehow. I mean, admittedly, it's not very cheerful for the horse.
No. Well, unless the horse just died naturally, in which case, fair dues. But,
It's that
yeah.
horse heaven going, "What are you doing with my head?" It's
So, yeah.
the lair ban. Sorry, I just couldn't remember what it was called. But that's an Irish tradition. That's where the hobby horse comes from. Did you ever ho have a hobby horse?
No, what's a hobby horse?
It's basically like a stuffed toy horse head on a pole with wheels on the end.
Oh gosh, yes.
That's a hobby
What?
horse. That
No, that's
comes.
not where it comes from. It can't be.
Yeah, it comes from the Mary Lude or the lair ban, which is the white mare, and it is the white horse of death. That's where it's come from. I mean, you've said you've seen Morris dancers. Obviously, you must have done if you're in the UK and you've been out in the country at all. At
Oh my
some point, you
God.
will have seen the Morris dancers.
They're terrifying. I don't agree with them. That said, Morris dancers can't exactly sneak up on you, can they?
But
So,
again, I mean, have you ever seen the dance they do with the white mare, with the horse? It's not a horse's skull. It's a toy horse head
No, I told
on a
you I
stick.
avoid them like the plague. I don't trust Morris dancers. Who would trust Morris dancers?
I can't help it. I have to, even though I find it really quite peculiar still. And once somebody said, "Oh, do you want to join in?" And I was like, "No." I did sort of, I can't help stopping to watch because it's so quaint and peculiar.
Well, I think they're great, but I just don't trust them.
If anyone doesn't know what Morris dancing is, basically it's usually men, but sometimes women are involved now too, and they're dressed up in sort of this weird sort of countryish regalia with long socks and bells, and they tend to wave hankies and bang sticks together, which we all know are a phallic symbol, you know.
Yeah, but it's the bells, basically. They wear a lot of bells, which hence my saying. You can't they can't really sneak up on you, so I'm okay from sort of I spot them from a distance and then go and run away.
And the dances are basically a play acting version of the fights they would have had to work out who the Year King was.
Yeah.
So, and now it's kind of like they'll dance around together, and you're stood there watching, and everyone's going, "Oh, isn't it lovely?" Particularly if you've got tourists from another country, and you're stood there watching them thinking, "Yeah, I know that they're dancing a fertility rite, and I'm not sure if they know that that's what they're doing."
I don't know. I've seen some of their expressions, and I'm pretty sure some of them know. Yeah, it's the mummers and stuff like that. And I don't know why they freak me out. I think it's that very. It's a mixture of the very old kind of. It's the uncanny element as well, because
Yeah.
very often they've got their faces painted in slightly peculiar ways, and they look not quite right, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it looks quite innocent, but actually it's not in the
It's not
way that.
innocent, no.
And it was another thing that I think sort of went underground when the Latin Church took over, so it got hidden, as it were.
Yeah, and obviously it's risen back up again now, as we go through our who are we crisis identity again for the, fifth million time. And so we start to get all these very, very old traditions, which again people perceive as very, very innocent, but have very, very old and often very, very violent themes, and actually themes which now people would associate as bad, which weren't at the time. And that huge element of death would make people uncomfortable now in a way that it just didn't back then.
It didn't. I mean, I think we're back to death being quite sanitised over in the Western world.
Yeah.
And whereas then it would very much have been part of life, not necessarily a welcome part, but part that was accepted and venerated in its own right, and perhaps seen as necessary.
Now, we talked about scrying earlier.
Yep.
So this is obviously also another element of something that happens tonight, which is that it's the time of visions and it is the time of dreams and things like that. So look out for any mysterious dreams that you might start having, because maybe they'll come true.
Since my dream last night was about four people being flayed in front of me in great detail, detail that I probably couldn't have come up with in writing, I really hope not.
Okay. Was I one of those people, Jules?
No.
Okay, good.
Okay, get your
Then
priorities straight.
just had to check. Was it? Were you having a Game of Thrones dream?
No, it was really weird. It was, again, this is too graphic for me to go into detail, but it was kind of like I knew I was asleep, but I couldn't wake myself up until I'd seen four people be skinned.
Well, that's.
I don't ever have good dreams, I'd like to point that out. Normally they're post-apocalyptic, but this was like very, very graphic.
Yeah, you do have your post-apocalyptic dreams, don't you?
Yeah, regularly. I don't know what part of my brain is processing stuff, but you've got to worry. Anyway, what are you doing for Halloween apart from carving a pumpkin?
Yes, carving my pumpkin. Well, actually, I was I've actually already technically celebrated Halloween because obviously it's a Monday today. But over the weekend, we did another aspect of the sort of wintry tradition, which is that we didn't tell ghost stories. I took my choir and we went and sang a few ghost stories, or a folk choir, in one of the most haunted pubs in Winchester.
Oh, and
They're
which
all
ones did you
miserable.
sing?
So we sang a number of different ones, but we sang Long Lankin, which is one you know about, which is
Yeah.
I learned about Long Lankin from Jules, so there you go. So we sang a version of Long Lankin. We sang a song called Holdra, Magpie, and my uncle came down as well, and he sang a few. So he sang Molly Malone.
Yeah.
We did my version of Scarborough Fair, which is Elder Oak, Ash Apple, and Thorn, which is all about Finn McCool. And this is another aspect of Samhain, which is that the other Celtic story of Samhain, which is for those who know the Fenian cycle, there was a creature, and I have totally forgotten his name, who used to basically come every Halloween, every Samhain, and would set fire to this dun every single year, and he would play music and send everyone to sleep, and then set fire to the dun, and I guess
Oh,
it was
yeah.
right. Finn McCool was tasked with defeating him. In a very Beowulf-esque kind of story, Finn basically did manage to defeat him, and that's what won him the right to rule the Fianna, basically to lead the Fianna.
Alan
So
McMignal.
that's it. That's it.
Or
Thank you.
Alan the Burner,
Yes, that's
if
right.
you prefer.
You know, when you translate the Celtic names, they're really unoriginal
It's like,
sometimes.
yeah.
We did and we did some music as well, which is another aspect of the winter and the Samhain tradition. We sang a few songs. We didn't burn anything to the ground though this
Good to
time,
know.
but you know, there's always next year. And yeah, so that's what we did. And other than that, today I'm just carving my pumpkin, and it's not even a scary face. I'm just doing swirls. I'll post a picture up. I'll post a picture up on the DD page because I'm sure you all want to see my excellent pumpkin. Have you carved a pumpkin this year, Jules?
Not yet, but the night is young.
It is, yes.
It's
I
only
figured I ought to do
technically
it.
just sunset now, so it's only technically Halloween now.
Have you got a pumpkin?
I have got a pumpkin.
Okay, I was gonna say because it's like I haven't carved a pumpkin yet. Do you have one? No. Okay. Let's see. I can continue to celebrate on for the next couple of days, as far as I'm concerned. We're totally fine. I also bought all these sweeties, right, for to give to anyone who I doubt anyone will come by because we're in apartments, so you know. To give to any children who come by for Halloween, and I put them in a jar, and I've somehow found that over the last few days, like the number of sweets has really gone down, and I have no idea, no idea at all
Or
what's happened to
maybe it's the
them.
fair folk.
It might be the fair folk, or it might be Sean, and it might be me, but I don't know. All I know is that I did have a jar full of coins, eyeballs, and pumpkins, and now I have half a jar full of coins, eyeballs, and pumpkins. So there you go. And perhaps tonight I will leave out a little offering, but I know I'm going to drink some mead. That's my honey for the night. Rather than real honey, I'm just going to get drunk. And that's how I'm going to celebrate Halloween. So yes, nothing too exciting this side either, but maybe next year, I'll Actually, do you know, last year I donned a ninja costume and hung out at the local playground. Scared a few people. That was fun.
That just sounds really bad when you say it out of context like that. I
It
donned a ninja costume.
did, because it's a good ninja costume, so no one could really see me. So I went to the I was very bored, I should add.
I'm totally on board with dressing like a ninja. I really am. It's just the hanging out at a playground thing.
Okay, I give context. There's literally it's when I say playground, there's literally just a sort of a playground literally outside where I live. I can see it from my window now, and it's got swings and things like that. And it was late at night, and so I just thought, you know what, I'm really bored. I'm going to try on this ninja costume. Then I tried it on and thought, I'm going to go and give this a test run. So I went to the playground and I was just messing around, and then I just stood there, and most people couldn't see me because I'm wearing entirely black. But you know, a few people walk past the path and they just sort of glanced over, and then they'd be like, ugh! Give a stop. And I thought, don't make a sound, don't acknowledge them, just stand there. And they all kind of looked at me and sort of went, we're moving on very, very quickly because there's some sort of weirdo hanging around.
Right, okay.
So maybe I'll repeat the tradition, dress as a ninja and go and frighten a few children.
There you go, folks, adding to the long line of Samhain and Halloween traditions, dressing as a ninja after carving a pumpkin.
Yes.
And then hanging outside and just scaring people. You heard it here on Dissecting Dragons first.
Oh,
That's about all we've got time for this week.
what a
So
shame.
we'll wish you a happy Halloween and a good Samhain again.
Remember that you're not safe just because Halloween's over. This entire season is all about the dead, so
Yes. November is the bone season.
beware of any white mares you see floating around, or any horse skulls you also see floating around. To be honest, if you see anything floating around, probably be a bit worried about it, except for aeroplanes.
You realise we now have to do an episode at some point in the future about ghostly horses because there's a whole can of worms there.
Okay, and on that note, we'll say goodbye. Catch you guys later.
Thanks and bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.